Epstein Drive looks like it's coming online. You guys are plugged in with the juice, right? We're live. Mike, you're up.
Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And today, we're talking about the new Kickstarter for the Expanse role-playing game designed by Mr. Steve Kanson. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for joining us again. Always a pleasure to have you.
Likewise.
My ever-ready co-host, Walt Rebilliard, is here as well, and he is a huge Expanse fan, so he'll probably be taking the lead on most of this, because I watch the show a lot, but Walt is really, he's a whole lot deeper on this than I am, so.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. I'm on weapons. It's fine.
All right. So just to get the basics out right away, go to Kickstarter right now, search for the Expanse RPG, being run by Green Ronin, using the Age engine, which, well, Green Ronin's had that for a couple years now, right?
Yeah. We've used that system for Fantasy Age, started out with Dragon Age, and most recently with our Modern Age core book, and now, and Blue Rose, and now The Expanse.
Can we back or sidetrack for a second and just say how much that I loved the rollout of how you guys did Dragon Age?
Thank you.
That was such a smart rollout so that it gave you enough to play, but mm-hmm. didn't ruin the games as they come out. That was a really smart choice.
Thanks. Yeah, that was all Chris Pramus. He did a great job with that.
Wow. I'm looking at Kickstarter page right now, and literally I'm seeing the numbers scroll up as I'm looking at it. You are at 155 plus on a 30K goal. So yeah. Congratulations. That's really impressive.
Thank you. We're thrilled. Blown away.
What's the upper limit? Have you guys talked about, like, if this, you know, if some movie studio approaches you or something like that, video game developer, like, we can do this in parallel?
We're working with a great property to begin with, you know. So, I mean, we knew that the Expanse had some passionate fans. We just, you know, didn't quite understand the scale.
Yeah, I'm going to say you've hit every stretch goal except for the last one, which is 175K, and that's the forward by James S.A. Corey.
Yeah, so, we're working on some things beyond that.
Wow. That's nice to see. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So it looks like there's the obligatory dollar level, just to say I want to support you. And then the lowest level where you get stuff is $20, which is the PDF level.
Yep.
And $30 is the Expanse RPG and GM's kit in PDF form. And then $50 is where we start talking about books.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, cool. Welcome. I'm going to hand the imaginary mic over to you so you can take point on this.
Well, one of the things I wanted to know is with the turbulence that the TV series had, involving switching studios. Did that affect you guys and what you were doing with the Kickstarter?
Well, it didn't, because our license is for the books and not the show. Although we certainly benefit from the fact that the show has brought the property to a wider audience, we are not affected by the show in any way, as far as, you know, its production or what happens with it, so far as that goes. As a fan of the show, I'm really glad that Amazon picked it up, and that it's going to continue, especially given where season 3 left off, because, you know, they're just really getting to a lot of the good stuff. But it didn't really affect our development of the game as far as that goes, because we're working with the books and we're working directly with the authors of the books. So we have their direct input as far as that goes. So it wasn't really a concern.
Right on. And probably before we go any deeper, we should issue a very huge spoiler warning if you have not read the books, if you have not read the TV series, or you've only just dipped your toe into the massive black pool that is The Expanse. If you want to keep from swearing like Ava Sorella, please save this show for another time so that you don't have your dreams of flying in the black crushed.
So, because at the end of last season, Thanos killed half of everybody in the
exactly.
But you know, he left Sorella around so that she could, you know, copiously, you know, make fun of people and swear at them like a drunken sailor.
Yes.
So, where did this all start? Like, did Chris or you say, I'm such a huge fan of this, we need to pursue this license?
Well, we worked with Ty Frank, who's one of the Expanse authors, along with Daniel Abraham. Ty used to work with George R. R. Martin. And so we knew Ty from when we were working with George on Wild Cards and on Song of Ice and Fire role-playing. And so Ty was familiar with us, knew that, you know, we did licenses. So he was talking to us a while back and basically said, hey, we're interested in licensing The Expanse to do a tabletop game. Would you guys be interested? And you know, we were all like, yeah, absolutely. We, you know, we're, you know, a lot of us were fans of the books. We, you know, started talking about it basically, but a lot of it had to do with the fact that Ty already knew us and was familiar with our work.
Nice. Where did the decision to go more literary than it was the TV angle going for the license?
Well, that's the license that the authors can offer us. The TV license would involve negotiations with the studio and is a much more involved issue as far as that goes. And we're perfectly happy working with the books as far as that goes. The show is great. You know, working with a TV or a movie property has certain advantages, but it also tends to involve a lot more money and it has its own complications. So we're great with working with the books.
Right on. How involved were the authors? I mean, did you guys have to have like weekly meetings over, you know, coffee and scones or something? Do they even eat scones, you know, out in the belt?
I can't speak to what anyone was eating on any of the calls, but we did talk and we exchanged a lot of emails and a lot of messages and they had a lot of input. In terms of making sure that we were capturing things, you know, the way they intended them, and that we were focusing on the aspects of the world that they felt were important from a game perspective. So, yeah, we worked very closely.
Now, the modern age book has been making the circles, and we've been taking a look at that, and it brings the age system into some fun territory. What kind of challenges did you guys have when you started designing for The Expanse with the age system itself? Like, did some of the space flight and stuff like that, did that present any challenges?
Sure. I mean, that was definitely one of the systems that we had to develop for Expanse because modern age doesn't focus on anything as advanced as space travel. So modern age was great in that Malcolm Shepard, who's the developer, did a lot of the initial work in taking the age system and building a really solid modern foundation for it. And then it was just a matter of taking that iteration of the age system and looking to add refinements that suited the style of the Expanse and additional systems like spaceships and space combat that obviously featured, you know, importantly in the stories that weren't really things that modern age took into account.
When you guys were developing this, instilling some of these changes, did you have to run the changes or run some of the playtesting through the authors to say, hey, is this the right feel that you're going for? Did you get to play games with the authors? That's more important.
Sadly, no. We didn't. We did, however, run our playtest drafts by the authors and got their feedback. We got feedback from our playtest groups along that, and we were comparing notes to see that the what feedback we were getting from the playtesters matched the kind of feel that the that we and the authors were looking for. So there was definitely a lot of back and forth and a lot of modifications and changes to fit a lot of those things to make sure we were syncing up with expectations.
When you sent these play test drafts in, did they send them back like covered in red pen?
No, there was they were very nice and they did not edit our occasional spelling mistakes and things like that. But they did provide us with a lot of feedback. And honestly, I'm appreciative that they took the amount of time to do that and the amount of detail that they did. So I definitely wouldn't be expecting them to, you know, edit our work. We pay other people for that.
Right on. No, I was talking about like the actual drafts of the playtests, you know, just correcting people's grammar as they're at the table. Writer joke, sorry. But going back to this property, where does this bring the players into? We had talked a little bit about it before we hit the big green mm-hmm. button. But can you tell us, and once again, spoilers, if you don't want to know this, now's the time to back out. Where does this bring us in the Expanse universe?
Well, so, Rosebud is a sled. Sorry, go ahead.
So basically, we made the decision to set the start point of the game in the there's an interim period in between the first two novels, Leviathan Wakes and Caliban's War. It's about I think it's about a year or so, but several months at least. And so we decided to sort of set the default start point of the game there, so that the initial events in Leviathan Wakes have already happened. And for everybody who's familiar with the story, that basically includes the Eros incident and. Now it's that, you know, sort of weird interim waiting period where something is happening on the surface of Venus, and Earth and Mars are poised, you know, pretty much with fingers on triggers on either side of things, with the belt caught in the middle. So it's a very, you know, sort of pivotal moment, and we felt it was a really good starting point. Where things have been set into motion, but not so far along that you feel like you're starting the story after it's already all happened.
Excellent. Now, one of the other questions I had as far as like game development and challenges go is the cool thing about The Expanse is even though you're dealing mostly with, you know, humanity, mm-hmm. Because of our exposure to different environments, people have adapted. And their bodies have changed slightly. So what do you do when you have the, you know, the one player at the table that wants to play a belter? And, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of challenges does that present? Because obviously, if you grew up in the belt without any type of special assistance medically, you're going to have a hard time if you have to travel to Earth or even yep. Mars, you know, and vice versa. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. We address the characters' origins, you know, whether they're, you know, an Earther or from a Martian or a Belter, in character creation, and the primary issue, as you point out, is that basically characters have a native gravity that their bodies are adapted to, and if they're not operating in their native gravity, they have to deal with certain conditions or certain penalties. But it's notable that to a certain degree that applies to everyone. you know, and while belters do have a difficulty with gravity as heavy as Earth normal gravity, similarly, Earthers who are raised in Earth normal gravity are not as capable in microgravity as belters are. Belters are much more adapted to microgravity because it's their native gravity. So there's a little give and take as far as that goes. And some of it, just like the narrative of the novels, relies on, you know, some management on the part of the game master. If you're going to have a group of mixed origin characters and you want to run a story that's set on Earth, then you're going to have to, you know, come up with some, you know, way to either, you know, include the belter character with some kind of support, or, you know, work a way around it, so that the character's involved in another fashion. You know, but a lot of that is really a narrative challenge, and we talk a little bit about that.
Nice. Now it seems like, you know, you got a lot of bases covered, and with a property like this, you would have to. As far as tone, the series, as it progresses, goes back and forth several times for different tone, which mm-hmm. is really impressive for a series, because most of the time, you know, even book series, you usually keep a steady tone. It's either military fiction or it's you know, science fiction noir or something like that. But the Expanse seems to be able to jump genres back and forth and do very well with it. Do you talk about that at all in the book?
We do. We talk both about the sort of overall tones of story arcs and even entire campaigns. And we also talk about the way that the age system breaks down different encounters or scenes. For basically there are action encounters, you know, which are you know, things that involve a lot of things happening very quickly. Often, you know, combats, for example, or dealing with a lot of hazards. There are environmental or exploration encounters that involve the characters interacting with their environment a lot and can be investigation and exploration. And there are social encounters that, not surprisingly, involve the characters interacting with other characters. We talk a lot about the sort of the tone and the pacing of those different types of encounters. And in The Expanse, we also add what we call interludes, which are basically a fourth type of encounter that don't occur in action time. They don't occur in that real time where you're measuring each moment, but instead occur in a much more narrative time where you're dealing with days and weeks. It makes it much more useful for dealing with interspersed scenes where the characters might be on a ship for 2 weeks, or they might be off on their own on shore leave for a week doing their own things. But it still maintains in the game system a series of actions that you're performing as part of that. So it's not, the game system supports that rather than it being an entirely, and you just do something kind of narrative.
Now, do the interludes, do they have something to do with just the characters, or like, is it like outside influence? Like they get to play some of the actions of, you know, the various political interests that are going on?
You could play the game that way. And we talk a little bit about the notion of, playing a multi-leveled Expanse game, you know, where you're also looking at some of the big picture stuff as well as the individual character level stuff. And interludes do make an effective kind of interface between those. It's not a assumed focus in the game. We don't by default assume that a group is going to do that, but you could.
Now, here's my one of the things I'm hoping for in the Expanse RPG, linguistics guide for you know, speaking yes. like you're from the Belt. Did you guys go into any of that?
We did, but we do have a certain limitation there. We do have a section on that talks about the Belter Creole and provides some vocabulary from that. But this is one area where we're somewhat limited by the nature of our license, because much of the Belter Creole on the show was actually invented for the show. The show had a linguistic expert actually design a Belter language for the show. So the stuff that we're able to use is the stuff that appears in print in the books. So it will not be as extensive a Belter glossary as you might expect from like the entire language of the show.
So there's not going to be any special references to Mike being the Denver salsa dance champion or anything like that?
Not to my knowledge, unless somebody's been changing my text.
That's a really deep cut. We stuck with that the first year of this podcast, which was 10 years ago.
But, I'm bringing it back around.
And it's the exact title is Salsa Dance Champion for the Rocky Mountain Area Husky Caucasian Division.
It never gets old to me.
They really insist to say that last part. So, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's an important distinction.
It's a very important distinction. crucial, you might say. Anyway, back to the Expanse.
I'm always a huge fan of art in an RPG book. Sometimes mm-hmm. I'll buy, even if I'm not a big fan of the system, I will go out and buy massive amounts of Dead Tree Matter just to get at the art and have it on my shelf. Yeah. Can you talk about the art process and possibly working with the author? Because the covers in the books are very, they're more abstract than they are detailed. Yes. But your art on your Kickstarter is phenomenal. It's really good. Can you talk about that?
Sure. We have the good fortune of having Hal Mangold on art direction, and Hal has a great eye for both graphic design and for art. You can tell from just the initial stuff that we've got, like the cover design and some of our pre-generated characters and the like on the Kickstarter, that we're going for a really some people described it as a little too science fiction-y art style. I think it still fits the game pretty well, but still pretty realistic style overall. It's going to be a very very slick looking book. Folks can take a look at the quick start PDF that you can download from the Kickstarter to get a sense of how things are going to look. That's not finalized by any means, because graphic designers, it gives you a really good idea of the where we're going in terms of the presentation. And I think it's going to be everybody at Green Ernie loves really nice looking books. So I think that we're going to make an effort to make this a really nice looking book.
And in keeping with that the cover for that special edition looks sexy.
I know, right?
That is amazing looking.
Yeah, I'm a really big fan of it. It's very simple, yet it really has a really great design with all of the orbital paths and everything like that. Again, that's just Hal being awesome. So,
yeah, where does that fall into as far as tiers go? Is that $100?
The special edition? I think I would know that off the top of my head. It's the $80. Yep, starts at the $80 level.
You guys have some pretty slick stuff that you can throw in there too, like Game Master screens, inserts, combat trackers. I mean,
yep, that's all in the works. GM screen is already planned. So,
and the image of that, the iconic opening salvos, basically from the first half of the first book, right mm-hmm. on the front of that.
Yep, that's actually one of the first pieces of art we developed.
Really?
For it, because we felt it was such an iconic moment in the books.
Yeah, everything off. That's just really, really gorgeous. I like too that you have a nice interplay in the art between ship life and life in like the habitats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you get to see people just out in the black doing their thing, and then you also get to see people just going to work. So there's normal right beside extraordinary. As far as like your stretch goals went, speaking of extraordinary, because you know you guys decided a hammer wasn't big enough to smash stretch goals. You decided to use one of those wrecking balls. You have lots of stuff that is included in the book, as far as like more about Mars, more about Earth, stuff like that. What about follow-on books? Is this going to be an entire line planned?
We're definitely talking about plans for future products, and we're not ready to announce anything yet, but there definitely will be further products. There are definitely going to be some follow-up. The very fact that we set things up so that the game starts after the first novel with, you know, several others, you know, to follow, gives you a sense of, you know, the sort of thing we have in mind in terms of expanding out the setting and the range of options that you have for it.
Yeah, this is actually very exciting, especially if you're a fan, because I mean, to have something like this where you can, you know, you can play those favorite moments or create some of your own, mm-hmm. You can really push the boundaries of where the author started and seeing
absolutely
what's next. Mike, did you have any questions, seeing as I'm hogging the microphone?
Hey, no, I'm good listening along. Plus my network's kind of flaky here at the moment. So I'm content. Just let you guys do your thing. I'll give you a shout if anything comes up.
Nice. Like, more accolades from Denver.
For example.
So no, I just, like I said, I'm really impressed with the Kickstarter, and
we already asked you, right?
Yeah. I watch a show with my wife. It fills the gaps for us between Game of Thrones seasons, which, you know, are kind of long. So have we already asked about future stretch goals past 175K mark?
We're working on some, but we haven't announced any yet.
Okay. All right. It looks really great. I know this is a conversation you have to have had, and I'm going to ask you the question. You'll politely decline, and that's cool. Mm-hmm. But you ever wonder about how high it's going to go?
I had no idea it was going to go this high, so I have no idea, honestly.
Yeah, it's kind of reminded me of Fate Core, just because I'm looking at it and literally seeing numbers tick up as I'm talking to you. So it's been a while since I've seen that on Kickstarter. It's
really great to see so much interest. So, you know, I'm really happy for that. It gives us, the great opportunity. You know, one of the nice things about Kickstarter is that it moderates your risk that you take, because putting out any new game product is always a risk. And Kickstarter gives you a great way to know up front how big your audience is as far as that goes. Now we know, that we can really pull out all the stops. You know, I mean, we're going to create the best product that we could to begin with. But now we, know that we can sink some, money into this, and we can, make it even better. So that's great. You know, we're really excited about that.
Does that give you guys any sense of, oh crap, we better knock this out of the park?
Yeah, I mean, there comes a certain, a sense of responsibility when you know that many people are, that excited about it. You know, I mean, I'd be lying if I said there, wasn't a certain amount of anxiety that comes with, like, oh wow, I guess this had better be good. we have a great great team. I had a lot of wonderful freelancers who did writing on the book. As I said, we have great art direction So, you know, and this is far from our, you know, first rodeo. So, you know, I have no doubt that, you know, people will be pretty happy with how it all comes out.
Yeah, there's just there's so much potential for a game like this, especially when you have such deep wells to draw from.
You know, absolutely.
Because the writer looks like he's not going to slow down anytime soon, or the writers rather, to be able to have something to keep going back like this is huge.
Sure. Well, I mean, and even if the Expanse series wrapped up, you know, right now, it's still such a vast setting, you know, with so many unexplored possibilities that you could sustain a game for years, you know, just poking around in its, you know, weird corners and things like that. You know, there's a lot.
So there's, I mean, it's a, the sort of hard sci-fi / military sci-fi niche that The Expanse fills. There's a lot of that out there. I mean, there's a lot of popular novel series that has crossed over so much to TV. You give any thought to, you know, other series, other, you know, books in that genre you might be interested in, you know, taking a look at for this rule set?
Well, one giant project at a time. But you know,
you're making Dune, aren't you? This is the next Dune RPG.
That'd be a whole different game, though.
Yeah, well,
I mean, you know,
especially since it bridges millennia of story.
Yeah, right. You know, yeah, Dune has a whole different. Honestly, if we were ever to do Dune, not to like go off on a tangent, but if we were ever to do Dune, I'd want to adapt our Chronicle system from Song of Ice and Fire for Dune rather than
that actually makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
do it with the age system, because Dune is all about the, you know, like the noble houses and your allegiances and, you know, all of that, and, you know, even some of the weird powers stuff would adapt pretty well from Chronicle would be great for something like that, but that's neither here nor there, because we don't have the Dune license and we don't have any plans at the moment, but, you know.
Well, I hear you. I was, thank you for talking about Dune, because usually I make these ridiculous statements like that, and people just like, let's move on to the next thing. But you addressed it, and I really appreciate that. No, it just seems like it'd be a great, you know, there's so much in that, that particular genre. You know, John Scalzi's Old Man's War comes to mind. Yeah. Blue Mars, some of the others. I guess this is really a feather in the cap for the age system. And I know Modern Age, it's out in PDF, pre-order for print, quick starts available for free on RPG Now for people who want to check that out. I know Malcolm couldn't be with us today. Can you touch just briefly on what's next for Modern Age?
So Modern Age is has a companion book that's coming soon that is a lot of expanded options for the system, provides a lot of customization tools for game masters. Modern Age is pretty, has a lot of options right out of the box with just the core book, but the companion really takes it to the next level in terms of having a lot more options to build the kind of campaign that you want. It looks at a lot of the different systems and expands them out in a lot of regards, from the Arcana and Extraordinary Powers stuff to you know, how to handle a lot of just unusual innate abilities that characters might have. If you want to do even some low-level superpowers or things that would be like cybernetic augmentations, or you know, characters who are, you know, I don't know, fairy-blooded or demigods or whatever, you know, to provide you with a lot more options for the kinds of games that you can run. So that'll be a really useful resource for the core book right out of the gate.
the Arcana stuff? I mean, is that being directly inspired by things like the Magicians or the Rook or like properties like that?
There's definitely a lot of inspiration in terms of sort of modern urban fantasy as far as that goes. And that's definitely one of the genres that that modern age is meant to take advantage of. And the game talks about if you want to do, you know, something like the Magicians, or you want to do, you know, basically any kind of, you know, modern crossover of, you know, fantasy, you know, and the modern world, the game is set up to do it. So there are a lot of options there. We're going to continue expanding on those.
Excellent. Now, with modern age, you're talking about cybernetics. Will like internet systems and hacking be addressed? Because I know that like a lot of games that are out there, one of the biggest complaints that you have anytime you enter a network or you enter a hacking phase or slicing mm-hmm. or whatever people call it, yeah. you know, it's always a, well, all right, guys, the Decker's doing his thing. Let's go get a smoke while they're doing their thing. Is there anything addressing that in the modern age system?
Modern age does have a system of handling essentially those kinds of challenges and encounters that I think abstracts things sufficiently to make them pretty quick and easy to do without, you know, the, you know, let's everybody take a break, you know, while we play out this long, you know, hacking challenge. But, you know, it still keeps them interesting and, you know, really gives the characters with the, who have those specialized skills an important role to play. So I think, and I think that system works well for a lot of different aspects of gameplay that are not combat, you know, like investigations and the like that play out pretty well.
So modern age is pretty geared, can be perfectly geared to something like playing Cthulhu-esque horror or anything like that?
Yeah, you could definitely do that.
So library use can be a scary thing, just like combat?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the game is not heavily skill-focused because it still focuses primarily on the abilities with the different ability focuses representing, you know, particular areas of training, but it doesn't get into the really, really fine levels of skill detail. A lot of the age systems approach is really, here's a difficulty, you know, make the roll, and you go from there. The stunts help to, you know, provide some flavor, but otherwise it doesn't focus, you know, on minute levels of detail in terms of action resolution.
Now, what's the craziest thing that people have been able to manufacture using modern age? I mean, obviously we have Expanse and the earth shattering ceiling that you guys just smashed through.
Right.
Have you had people write in say, hey, I love the system. This is what I'm doing with it.
You know, I've heard a lot, ironically, I've heard a lot of people who want to run Shadowrun with the modern system, you know, and that might just be because Shadowrun is so ubiquitous when, you know, it comes to modern urban fantasy stuff now, especially for gamers,
the Shadowrun system is so intuitive and easy. I could see wanting to make it, you know, a little crunchier and, you know, challenging.
Right. Right, no doubt. I'm sure that you know they're looking for, you know, the level of rules detail that modern age can bring.
It's the opposite, but yeah. You know, Netflix Bright, that would be fun.
Yeah, you could totally do that with modern age.
I love that. That is such a guilty pleasure, that movie.
Yeah,
they need to do like five more.
Yeah, I wish Max Landis wasn't such a creep because I feel a little bad watching it, knowing what he's up to. But it's a fun. I just watched it the other like last week in the gym. So yeah, mm-hmm. I have to agree with you on that.
Nice. The as far as like going back to the Expanse again, where did you guys like get your plague test group from? That's one of the questions I've always wondered. Is it all in-house stuff? So, or what goes into, I don't think that's a question you get asked mm-hmm. very much, but what goes yeah. into getting into a playtest group? Like, hey, we want to develop this modern version of Fantasy Age, or mm-hmm. we want to develop this license for The Expanse, and we're going to use these players to do it. Now, here's an NDA. I mean, how does that work?
Well, in our case, it was largely working closely with the freelancers who were working with us on the project. And unsurprisingly, you know, our freelancers were all gamers and they all have game groups. So we were like, so, you know, who wants to run some games? And, you know, not surprisingly, people volunteered. So we were able to keep things fairly in-house, you know, so far as that went. For the most part, you know, if you, you know, have the luxury of doing a, you know, a long widespread playtest, you know, that's great. You know, and some, you know, games have, you know, a long enough development cycle that you can do that, you know, even, you know, publish your playtest draft and have all your players play it for a year before you actually publish the actual book. But for most games, you know, playtest tends to be a relatively in-house process usually.
So it's kind of like a perk of the job. Yes, you get. We have help. We have dental. Yeah. Oh, and you get to check out free games anytime we.
Pretty much. That used to be a thing. That was the big thing for my gaming group when I was a freelancer, was that we got to playtest all kinds of things, because I would be like, hey guys, I'm working on this thing, and we get to play test it. They're like, okay, what is it? So we ended up starting more games that way.
That's fantastic. I got to get on one of those lists. How many more days do we have on this Kickstarter? Like, you know,
I think we're only in our second day. So I'm pretty sure that we've still got another 29 days to go.
Oh my God. God, what do the authors think of the success of the Kickstarter? Have you talked to them?
They seem very pleased, you know. I've only been communicating via email, so I think that Chris Premis has had a chance to actually talk. But yeah, they seem very happy with it, and you know, have been, you know, offering their encouragement and all of that. So we're very appreciative of their support. Obviously, they've been bringing it to the attention of their fans, which, you know, I'm sure has a good deal to do with its success. So,
now, do you think this is going to be like a gateway drug for people who might have been into the books but never tried role-playing games before, and vice versa?
I certainly hope so. I think that'd be great if it is. You know, I'm always excited by anything that offers the prospect of, you know, a pathway into gaming, you know, for somebody who's never tried it before. So, you know, I'm pretty excited about that notion.
This, just out of curiosity, did we see much of that with Song of Ice and Fire?
We did see some of that. You know, we definitely, especially at some of the sort of more media conventions like PAX, and things like that are a little broader than sort of the game specific tabletop focused conventions. We would definitely see people who were fans of the show, whose, you know, eye would be caught by, oh, hey, it's a Song of Ice and Fire thing. And who'd be like, so what's this? And we would be like, well, it's a role-playing game. And, you know, a conversation would ensue about, you know, exactly what that was and, you know, how that, you know, all worked out. And we definitely sold some books, you know, to people who were fans of the books or the show, you know, who were curious to try it out. So, you know, it definitely does happen.
Now, at what point do you think that you guys will run out of steam as far as stretch goals and stuff go? Do you think that's going to happen?
I hope so. That honestly would be a good problem to have. We're discussing, you know, plans, and we've got a lot of possibilities in the works. If it goes you know, so crazy that, you know, we just run out of ideas, then, like I said, I think that's a pretty good problem to have at that point.
While we've been sitting here, you guys have hit the accelerator several times. So
Yeah. We're up to 157.
Dear Lord.
So
do you have somebody on staff that just sits there and goes, guys, you'll never guess. We just got 10 more.
Yeah. Our company Slack channel is full of notifications about where the Kickstarter is and, you know, every like major break point or whenever we hit a stretch goal or something like that, somebody will, you know, like come on and be like, we hit another one, like, you know, and like announce the amount. So
somebody's using it as like an exercise tracker. Every time the Slack channel rings, you just change exercises or something like that.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Another 10 reps. There we go. Somebody's getting real buff off of this. So with us reaching toward the bottom of the hour, Steve, because you've been very generous of your time, and we know you're probably got like 5 billion things to do and 100 emails to answer at any given point. What would you like to other people to know? What would you like people to know other than what we've already discussed about the Expanse Kickstarter or even Modern Age or anything that Green Ronin has coming up?
Well, I guess I'd really, you know, if folks are interested, I strongly encourage them to check out the Quick Start products that we've got available for both the Expanse and Modern Age. There's a separate Quick Start for each one that really give you a really good overview of, you know, what those games are going to offer. You know, you're going to get a real sense of how to play them, a complete adventure you can play, and a set of ready-made characters so you can play it. So, you know, if you're at all interested, and especially if you're an Expanse fan who's interested in tabletop gaming, but, you know, wants to give it a try, then, you know, check it out. You know, I think that it's a great lead-in and it's a great opportunity to get a taste of, you know, what those games offer, you know, for free. So why not?
Absolutely. Now on the Cape and Cowl set, you guys just released another character pack, didn't you?
For Icons?
For Icons, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, we just did the Hero Pack Annual that Dan Houser put together. And that's a Dan Houser production, basically from top to bottom. It's another like jam-packed 100 pages of illustrated, statted out Icons characters. Dan did a great job as usual putting it all together. So for folks who, you know, can't get enough superheroes and supervillains and super characters in general, like the Icon system in particular, you know, it's a great product. It's up on Drive-Thru RPG and RPG Now as usual with all the other Icon stuff. So by all means, check it out.
Anything else? I know, I was saying a minute ago, you're probably so busy. You need a publicist or an assistant. Are you hiring? Just kidding. Do you have anything else coming up for Icons that you'd like to talk about real quick?
Nothing I can talk about yet. I've got a couple of things in the works, but, you know, sadly, as you said, my free time has been kind of limited. unfortunately, Icons is one of those things that's largely my spare time kind of project.
Gotcha. Mike, parting thoughts.
Sorry, okay. I was talking to mute. Hey, it's always a pleasure to have you, Steve. Really, thanks for making the time to come talk to us.
Likewise. Always great talking to you guys.
Really appreciate it. Mike, do you want to give the outro or do you want me to do it? Because, you know, dental work.
It's all right. Actually, today wasn't that bad, the dentist. or the painkillers haven't worn off yet, so I'm good. Thanks, everybody, for coming out today. And thanks to our listeners. And we will catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Cheers.